is based on a true story, though some scenes and characters are fictional.
They say that money makes the world go round. What idiot invented money? Money is only money, but love is divine. I loved him. That's the only answer, isn't it? The only possible explanation.
A silver-haired man in his 50s walks into a police station and addresses the desk clerk.
My name's John Darwin. I think I might be a missing person.
What makes you think that, sir?
Well, I can't remember anything. It's all a blank. I remember I was in a canoe.
In a canoe?
A canoe, and that's the last thing I remember, yeah.
The desk sergeant stares at him. Dressed in waterproofs and a hat, John Darwin carries a canoe across a beach, then paddles out to sea. Bernard Hill, Saskia Reeves, and Jeremy Swift. Canoe Man.
John Darwin.
Yeah.
Disappeared 5 years ago in a canoe.
Yes.
If it is your dad, go easy on him. He's suffering from amnesia. He's a bit fragile, so don't rush him.
John's face lights up when he sees his son.
Mark?
I didn't believe it was you.
They embrace.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
And who's this?
This is Flick, Dad. We're getting married.
Hello, Mr. Darwin.
Oh, call me John. Hello.
I missed you, Dad.
Where's your brother? Where's your mother?
Anthony's on his way. Mum is in Panama.
Panama? What's she doing in Panama?
And Darwin answers a phone.
Hello.
Mum?
Mark? What is it? What's the matter?
You're never going to believe this, but it's true.
I'm sitting here next to Dad.
Your dad? Did you see your dad?
Yes, Mum. Dad's home. He's sitting here right next to us. He's lost his memory. I'll put him on, but...
Don't ask him any questions yet, because he's a bit fragile.
Hello, Annie? Yes, it's really me. Apparently I'm back from the dead.
Are you all right? What are you doing in Panama?
What am I doing in Panama?
John paddles across the sea, sun glinting off the surface.
How did I get into this mess? How do you make sense of all the stupid things I've done? All the stupid mistakes I've made. Like marrying John in the first place. John worked for the prison service. That was never good enough for John. Nothing was ever good enough for John. He's always wanted to be grander than he was. Always had ideas above his station.
Anne drives up to a clifftop overlooking an empty beach. John reaches the shore and abandons the canoe and his hat in the sea, then gets into the 4x4 with Anne. They drive home.
I can't do this.
Yes, you can.
Well, what do I tell the boys?
Well, you tell them I'm dead. It's no big deal. Everybody dies.
Jesus, John. Once I make that phone call, John, there's no going back.
Going back? Going back to what? Bankruptcy. Repossession. Bloody humiliation.
We could start over.
You really have no idea what bankruptcy means, do you? Well, I'm not going to end up living in a bloody council house. Not me.
Anne brings the car to a halt.
John, please, don't do this.
It's too late, Annie. Whether you make that phone call or not, I'm getting on that train. As far as you're concerned, I went out in the canoe and I never came back.
He gets out of the vehicle.
You've given me some choice.
He zips up his coat.
Don't let us down, Annie.
John walks away, leaving Anne anxious. At home, she prepares to make a phone call.
My husband is taking the canoe out. He's not come back. I'm getting worried. My husband, he took the canoe out and he should have been back by now. I think something's happened to him.
Launches down a ramp into the sea and conducts a search in the dark. A helicopter buzzes overhead. John rings a bell in a hotel reception.
Can I help?
Yes. Do you have a room for tonight?
Anne sits in her empty bedroom, flicking a lamp on and off.
John always did what John wanted. Never any thought for the consequences. He told me he was going to be a millionaire by the time he was 30. At 50, we bought two houses we couldn't afford.
We rent one out as bedsits, and we live in the other. The rent from the bedsits pays the mortgages on both houses. It's basic economic sense.
It was only a matter of time before the bailiffs were banging on the door.
Desperate days need desperate deeds. I'm worth more dead than alive.
John uses a microfiche reader to search the death, birth and marriage archives between 1976 and 1979.
Perfect. John Darwin is dead. Long live. John Jones.
A clean slate, Annie.
Daytime and a canoe paddle is washed up on a beach. A detective knocks on Anne's front door.
Anne Darwin. Detective Sergeant Twist.
Have you found him?
Could I come in?
She lets him into the living room.
We've found a paddle, Anne. It's got the name Orca written on the side of it.
Oh, Jesus God.
Do you and John have any family?
Mark and Anthony. They live down south. I haven't told them yet. I didn't want them to worry.
That's probably best if you call them now.
Mum? What is it?
What's the matter? Mum?
It's your dad, Mark. He's gone missing.
What are you saying?
I've lost him, Mark. I've lost your dad.
The canoe bobs upside down in the grey sea. John's erecting a tent in a campsite.
It's £5 a night.
Right.
How long are you staying?
Probably about a week.
£35 then.
Any discount for the whole week?
£35.
John hands over the money to the owner.
Thank you.
Mark and Anthony hurry home and hug their tearful mother.
Oh, Mark.
She holds them tightly. In a pub, John taps a coin against an ashtray to get the barman's attention.
Pint of bitter, please.
John watches a news report on the TV.
About it. One canoeist out there in the open sea, no navigational aids, no homing beacon, no radio equipment, not like a modern trawler might have. It's been literally like trying to find a drop in the ocean. Now, that search went on for about 33 hours, and then dramatically at mid-afternoon today...
Anything else, pal?
Coast Guard decided enough was enough and called...
Yes, I'd like a large scotch and a touch more subservience.
...of the Red Car lifeboat, Mike Picknett. Mike, why was that decision taken in the end? What are his chances now if he's still out?
I'll have to see if the guy's at sea. His chances now are very, very slim indeed.
Mike, thank you. From Red Car, back to the studio.
Anthony and Mark gaze out to sea.
It's like he just vanished in the thin air.
I think he's dead.
Yeah. Why couldn't the silly sod play golf? Or race pigeons like other men his age? That wouldn't be Dad. Stupid old sod.
Mark laughs softly. Now they're inside with Anne.
Not knowing what's happened. That's the worst thing. They're not knowing.
Do you want me to get it?
No. Hello?
It's me. Can you talk?
No, it's not convenient right now. That's right, so I can't talk now.
I'm in a phone box. Take this number down.
Go on.
Mark and Anthony share a confused look.
I'll be here every night at 6. Right? Now don't let me down, Annie.
Well, I said I'd call when I can. When it's convenient, all right.
Who was that?
Nobody.
John's lying in his tent.
Still here, then?
Maybe just another week.
£35.
He takes the money out of his wallet and gives it to the campsite owner.
Have a nice life.
John frowns. Anthony and Mark leave the house.
You sure you'll be all right, Mum?
I can stay a bit longer if you want.
No, you should get back to work, both of you.
There's lots for you to get sorted. The inquest, the insurance.
Well, it's all going to take time. You need to get on with your lives.
Mum.
Oh, no, come on, be strong. Well,
call us, Mum, if you need us.
Go on, get going.
Bye, Mum.
Bye, Mum.
Good night, God bless.
John's waiting beside the phone box, impatiently checking his watch. stands sitting on the beach. John takes out a few coins and calls home. The phone rings in the empty house. Anne remains on the beach, looking troubled and lonely. John zips up his tent for the evening, and Anne sleeps alone in her bed. A new day, and John eats out of a tin. Anne pours herself a glass of white wine. John waits by the phone box, then Anne nurses her wine as her phone rings. She fiddles nervously with a glass, unsure of what to do. John hangs up and storms out of the phone box.
Bitch.
He hurries back to answer the phone.
Where have you been? Have the boys gone?
Danny, I can't stay out here much longer.
You've got to come and pick me up. Annie? Annie?
Annie, I want to come home.
It's always what you want, isn't it, John?
I did this for us, Annie. For you and for me.
Please, Annie, come and get me. I want to come home. I want to come home.
John's leaning against the phone box with his bag packed. Anne pulls up in the 4x4. John puts his bag in the back, then sits in the front.
Annie.
Don't speak to me.
They drive off, then return home.
I can't tell you how good this feels.
Now's the time to put a stop to this before we get in any deeper.
Come here.
Oh, you stink.
Yeah, well, you stink if you've been living in a tent for 3 weeks.
Well, I haven't. I've been here on my own, lying to the police, lying to my own children.
It's gonna be all right.
How? How exactly is it gonna be all right? What are we gonna do?
Well, I'm gonna have a shower.
John cleanses himself under the shower, and Anne leans against the kitchen sink with a brooding expression. Seething with anger, she tightens the dripping tap. Then her expression appears to soften. John soaks himself beneath the cascade of water, then turns around to see Annie getting into the shower. They kiss and cuddle under the water. Morning. A sign outside their second property next door reads, "Bedsits available." John's moving a wardrobe into the bedroom upstairs. He picks up a sledgehammer and smashes a hole through the wall into one of the bedsits next door. The sound of hammering is heard from the street. Anne returns home.
Come here. I want to show you something in the bedroom.
Oh, you've got something to show me in the bedroom. Give us a break, John. I've had a hard day at the office.
The room looks normal, and the wardrobe has been moved back.
John?
The wardrobe doors open.
Stop playing silly buggers, John.
A hand beckons her through the wardrobe, past a rack of clothes, and into the bedsit.
What do you think? One of the empty bedsits. I could hide away in here for years and no one would know I existed.
You don't exist. You're a dead man.
She goes back through the wardrobe into the house, leaving John alone in the drab bedsit. Now they're in the house together, having a cup of tea.
There's no way out of this, is there? We're stuck with this now, aren't we?
Until after the inquest, when I'm officially dead, and we claim the insurance, sell up and go.
Go where, John?
Well, a long way from here. Oh, Canada. Greece. Go wherever you fancy.
Don't you need some sort of identity to go wherever you fancy? Like a passport or something.
I'm John Jones. And John Jones has got a birth certificate. Ergo, John Jones can get a passport.
Oh, just like that. Oh, run and hide. Hide, John. Hide away in your little hidey hole.
John tiptoes upstairs and Anne tidies their cups away before answering the door to Detective Sergeant Twist.
Hello, Anne.
Have you found him?
Anne hurries upstairs and through the wardrobe into the bedsit.
It's the police. They found a body. They think it's you. They want me to go and identify it. What am I going to do?
Well, go and have a look and then tell them it's not me.
I can't.
Yes, you can.
I can't.
You can. You just have to stay in character. Play the grieving widow.
She heads out, and John continues reading his book. In an empty church, Anne kneels and crosses herself, then begins to pray. Waves lapping up on the beach. Anne leans on her hand, looking deeply anxious as rain lashes against the window.
And so it went. Looking over my shoulder, dreading every knock on the door, dreading going home. Worried sick that John might have been seen, or he'd broken his leg, or even that he had actually died. Then what would I do? Don't tell me you found another body.
I've come about the inquest, Anne. I'm going to be giving evidence, so I'd like to have a chat before the inquest.
Chat?
Look, John.
Twist looks out of the window at the sea.
Great view.
Yes.
Must be hard for you, though. Looking out at the sea every day, wondering what happened to John. It's like a daily reminder, isn't it?
I'm thinking of selling up, moving away.
Best thing, probably.
But I can't do anything until there's a death certificate.
Were you and John very close?
Married for 30 years. Of course we were close.
Funny thing, though, you know, I can't help but notice that you don't have any photos of John.
Well, we were never one for photos.
Was John acting strange, Anne, before he went missing? Was there anything untoward going on?
I've no reason to think John would just have up and left and stage-managed all of this, if that's what you're getting at. He's dead and I'm in limbo. People die, have a funeral, a headstone, something to mark the fact that they existed on this earth.
but without a body, I don't know how we can move on.
Well, the inquest should help with that. Are Mark and Anthony coming?
Yes. It's the closest thing we're ever going to get to a funeral, isn't it?
Anne, Mark and Anthony are standing on a pier.
Your dad is now officially dead. It means I can move on.
They're each holding a wreath of flowers.
Do you want to say a few words, ma'am?
We should say something.
They all stare mournfully at the sea. Anne appears lost for words.
I missed you, John.
John watches from the window of the house as they throw the wreaths into the water.
I miss you, John.
Miss you, Dad.
Miss you, Dad.
Twist watches them from afar. A heart-shaped wreath floats on the surface. A flashback to John in his canoe. John's reading a newspaper in the kitchen.
Come out wherever you are.
It's only me.
It's only the grieving widow.
In here.
Congratulations, you are now officially a dead man.
We've done it, Annie. We're home free.
You're home, John, but you're not free. You don't have a life, you have an existence. You're totally dependent on me. How does that make you feel?
Well, how does this make me feel? This piece of paper is the golden key.
He smiles at his death certificate, but Anne walks away appalled. She prays at church, clutching a string of rosary beads.
It was out of control, past the point of no return. I was tempted to turn him in many times, but I couldn't. As difficult as he was to live with, it would have been even more difficult to live without him. And thus our lives went on, mine on the surface at least, as normal.
What do you do here all day, John, all by yourself? How does a dead man kill time?
Lackluster and emotionless, John sits in an armchair in the silent living room.
Every year, on the anniversary of John's disappearance, I'd throw flowers into the sea, playing the grieving widow, keeping up appearances. We knew he couldn't hide in the house forever.
John ventures outside, wearing a baseball cap, coat and scarf. He has his photo taken in a photo booth. Then at home, he fills out a form for a passport. He ignores the phone.
Phone?
Yes, come in. Hello? Yes, yeah, speaking. Can I call you back? There's somebody at the door.
John sneaks into his bedsit.
Mum? This is Flick.
Hello, Mrs. Darwin.
Come in, come in.
Anne looks flustered as she welcomes Mark and Flick into her home. She goes upstairs and into John's bedsit.
It's Mark and his new girlfriend. They're going to stay over, so you'll have to stay here the night.
Well, but I'm hungry.
Tough titty.
Well, what am I going to do?
Stay in character. Play the dead man.
She goes back downstairs.
Man, aren't they dance slippers?
What?
Dance slippers.
Her face fills with panic as she realises John's slippers are in the corner.
Don't you think you should throw them out?
Yes. I should. I should, really. I should throw them away.
Mark looks worried, and Flick offers him a comforting hand. Anne throws more floral tributes into the sea.
John Darwin is dead. John.
John receives a passport and smiles to himself. He rotates a globe, then looks at a website entitled Move to Panama.
Panama?
Wonderful climate, beautiful countryside, and cheap. It's all we've ever dreamed.
Well, dream on, John. What about the boys? I'm not leaving the boys.
Panama. With £500,000 in the bank. Well, I'll tell you what. When we're safe and settled, well, then the boys could come over. We could explain it all. Tell them why we had to do what we had to do.
How do you suppose they're going to react to that? No, yes, Dad. Makes perfect sense. We understand. I don't think so.
We have to try and stay positive, Annie. We can't go on like this, can we?
No. We can't.
John's talking to a man via webcam.
All you have to do, John, is make the decision. And if you decide you want to come to Panama, we take care of everything else. We arrange for visas, bank accounts, we find properties for you to look at, we do everything. All you have to do is make up your decision.
Carlos, this is my wife, Anne.
Ah, hello, Anne. Hello. Hola.
Is that right? You make all the arrangements to everything for us?
We do everything. If you decide you want to come to Panama, all you have to do is put yourself on an aeroplane. We'll even book the flights.
An airliner takes to the sky. The sprawling skyline of Panama City. Carlos takes Anne and John into an apartment.
Okay, come through. This is it. Here we are. This apartment is yours for 6 weeks, and if you need to stay longer, no problem.
It's lovely.
For today, just take it easy. Tomorrow I will come and show you some very nice places.
I like this one.
This place is just for rent here. Here's a look at what you can look at buying tomorrow. Okay? So, just relax for now, and I will come and pick you up in the morning.
Okay?
Okay? 10 o'clock tomorrow morning.
Bye.
Rosa, por favor. Bienvenidos.
Anne looks lovingly at John, then is overcome by desire and throws herself at him.
So sorry to disturb you again. I forgot. We like to take pictures of our clients to put on our website, but Rosa will not be with us tomorrow, so can we do it now? Do you mind?
No, we don't mind, do we, John?
Not at all.
Perfect. Okay, Rosa, prepara la cámara. Sí, ahí, con el botón. Okay. We're all ready? Okay. Everybody say Panama.
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 Excellent. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank okay. You
see you out.
Bye-bye.
Hi.
Anne cranks up a gramophone.
Bye. Bye, thank you.
She places a needle on the record. Then starts to dance.
Oh, I feel free, John. Like I can breathe and relax for the first time in years. Like a great weight's been lifted off me. Like a big black cloud has blown away.
They dance the tango together, both beaming with delight. He leans her backwards, then spins her around. Their feet tread on the property details scattered across the floor. Carlos shows them around another apartment in the city.
Oh, I love it. It's beautiful. John?
Yeah, it's perfect.
There are others. There are more apartments we can look at.
No need, Carlos. This is the one we want.
Are you sure?
This is the place.
Yeah. This is the place.
Well, welcome to Panama.
In England, their properties have been sold and Anne's on the beach with Mark and Anthony.
It's a bit of a shock though, ma'am. I could understand somewhere like Spain or Cyprus, but Panama?
It's only a 14-hour flight.
Only?
What's 14 hours in a lifetime? You can visit 2 or 3 times a year. I don't see much more of you than that now.
If that's what you really want to do.
I need a clean break. A fresh start.
Hey, you're not going to get married again, are you, ma'am?
Don't be ridiculous. It's bad enough being married to your dad.
Only I don't want to lose my inheritance.
It wasn't bad, though, was it, ma'am? Being married to dad.
No, of course not.
I miss him.
I know you do.
In Panama, John signed some paperwork.
That's it. Congratulations. You now own a piece of Panama.
Thank you.
Okay, these here are for you to sign and fill in later. This one here is for you to register your company in Panama. And this one here is for you to apply for your investor visa. There's no hurry, but you must apply within 90 days.
Investor's visa. What's that for?
Well, now you need to have this visa before you can become a permanent resident. It's not a problem, though. All you need to do is get your identity checked with your English police.
John blanches.
Right.
Now, John, when is your lovely wife coming home?
Oh, soon, I hope. Soon.
He stares grimly at the paperwork, then later, he jangles some keys at Anne via webcam.
Look what I've got.
Has it all gone through?
Yeah. But it's not that simple. Apparently we need some sort of investor's visa.
No, well, we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. What's happening there?
Exchange next week, complete the week after. So all being well, I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Annie?
What?
Take your clothes off.
Don't be ridiculous, John.
Go on.
I need a fix.
You can have one in 2 weeks.
In his new apartment, John sips a drink whilst fretting over the paperwork. In England, Anne's going through John's possessions with Mark and Anthony.
You wore those when we got married.
Don't you want to keep them?
Oh, I don't want to keep anything.
Mark opens a tin containing a wedding band.
Even his wedding ring.
We'd have wanted you to have it.
We will see you again, ma'am, won't we?
Yes, of course you will. I'm always on the end of the telephone if you need me.
Feels like the end of an era.
No, it's not. It's a new chapter. It's a whole new beginning.
They raise a toast. An aeroplane lands in Panama City, and John greets Anne at the airport.
Welcome home.
They kiss. In their apartment, Anne's reading a book, fanning herself with a hat. She goes over to John, who's tapping away at a computer.
What's the matter?
I've got a problem.
What? What is it?
It's a visa. We can't be permanent residents until we get one, and without one, this apartment's just a holiday flat, not a place to live.
Can't we get one?
Let's see how we can.
What's stopping us?
Well, the British police have got to verify my identity. I can't see how we can do that as John Jones, seeing as how he's been dead for the last 50 years.
What we're going to do?
Don't know. I'm working on it.
At night, Anne's reading and John's still using the computer. He does a web search for amnesia. A flashback of John in the canoe. He joins Anne in bed.
I've worked it out, Annie. There is only one way to get that visa. I've got to be John Darwin again.
You can't be John Darwin again. John Darwin is dead.
Missing, presumed dead. It's simple, Annie. I go back to England and I tell them that I've lost my memory. I can't remember anything. The last 5 years are a complete blank.
You're a bloody fool if you think they're going to believe that.
Why, what? It's plausible. People get amnesia. Happens all the time. I've done the research, Annie. This is the only answer.
It won't work.
I'd have to give the insurance money back. But we still have the profit from the houses. We still have well over 300 grand in the bank. And we could be a family again. I'd get the boys back.
It's a stupid, crazy idea.
If you fold, you lose. Carry on bluffing, and you might just win.
No, John, forget it. Don't even think about it. There's got to be another way.
All right, well, you think of one then.
He locks himself in the bathroom. And stares long and hard at his reflection. A new day, and Anne's vacuuming the apartment. John sitting outside with a glass of wine and a book. Suddenly inspired, Anne drops the vacuum and rushes outside.
The police can verify my identity.
I can get the visa.
Well, that's just it, Annie. Everything I have is in your name. And I'd feel a lot happier, more secure, if I was John Darwin again.
Are you saying you don't trust me, John? After all we've been through?
Well, just for the sake of argument, Annie, if you wanted to dump me and walk away with half a million quid, then you could. And I'd be stuck here in Panama. Without a pot to piss in. Now, just try and see it from my perspective, Annie. It's not that I don't trust you. Don't you ever think that.
I've had enough, John! Enough! Enough!
She throws the glass of wine in his face. He finds Anne huddled on the floor of the shower with her arms crossed over her chest. She looks up at him, He leans down and kisses her. And she nestles against his shoulder. John walks into a police station in England.
My name's John Darwin. I think I might be a missing person.
A man's knocking on the apartment door in Panama.
Mrs. Darwin? Mrs. Darwin, are you there?
Anne standing behind the door, reluctant to open it. She peers through the spy hole at the man.
I've come with news about your husband, Mrs. Darwin. Aren't you pleased to know he's alive? Back from the dead after all these years?
What do you want?
I'm a journalist, Mrs. Darwin. Here's my press card.
He slips it through the letterbox. She lets him into the apartment, and they're sitting at a table.
My husband has just come back from the dead. You ask me how that feels. I can't begin to describe how it feels. It feels unreal. Totally unreal.
Yeah. Tell me what you remember about the day John went missing.
21st of March 2002. It's etched on my brain. It started out like any normal day. I had no idea it was going to turn into the worst day of my life. After I finished work, I did a bit of shopping, then I went home.
She puts the groceries in the fridge. Then the phone makes her jump, causing her to drop an egg.
It was the prison service. John hadn't turned up for his shift. I don't know why, but I suddenly thought he must have taken the canoe out, and I started to worry. It was getting late. He'd vanished without a trace, and I haven't laid eyes on him from that day to this.
So, where do you think he's been all this time?
I have absolutely no idea. I've been a widow these last 5 years, or so I thought. And now this. Do you like a glass of wine?
If you're having one.
Yeah, I think I need one.
As she fetches a bottle and two glasses, the journalist receives an email on his laptop. He suddenly looks shocked.
You look as though you've seen a ghost.
Papers just sent me something I need you to look at. It's not going to be easy.
He turns the laptop round for her to see. The email contains a photograph of Anne, John, and Carlos in the rental apartment in Panama. She hangs her head and breathes heavily.
John's been arrested. I think you've got a whole lot more that you can tell me, haven't you, Anne?
That picture says it all, doesn't it?
The photo is dated 14th of July 2006. John's being interviewed by Detective Sergeant Twist.
I remember I was in a canoe. But I don't remember the accident or anything after that. So it must be true to say that I have some rare form of amnesia. It was some years later. I must have turned up at home. But I have no idea how I got there.
My wife was understandably shocked, given that she thought I was dead. And it was then that I realised that all this money had been paid out. Insurance policies and all the rest. Because I'd been declared dead.
So you then decided you'd be better off if John Darwin stayed dead?
Yes, for the time being. But I always meant to pay the money back. There was never any intention to commit fraud. And I'd like to add also that my wife acted under extreme duress.
The day John went missing, I thought he was dead. I really did. I mourned him and I cried. And as far as I was concerned, John was dead.
When did you find out that he wasn't dead, since that's clearly the case?
A year or so after he vanished.
OK, so you come home and you realise you're better off dead, and then you stole the identity of a dead child, John Jones, and you proceeded to obtain a passport using that false identity.
Yes.
John Jones, who, let us not forget, died in 1950, joined the local library in April 2002, just 4 weeks after you vanished. How'd you explain that, John?
All right. It was all my idea. I planned the whole thing from the very beginning. I simply took my canoe out, paddled down the coast, and cast it adrift.
And did you have a car waiting for you down the coast, John, or what?
Yes. I made my wife. She picked me up and she drove me to the station.
So Anne was in it from the very start?
She tried to talk me out of it, but I made her do it. I repeat, Anne acted under extreme duress.
Who put her under that duress, John?
Oh, well, I'd have thought that was bloody obvious. Why? It must have been me.
What's extreme duress, John?
No comment.
Is it a threat of violence?
No comment.
Is it a psychological threat?
No comment.
What exactly is extreme duress?
No comment.
Those are your words, John. Extreme duress. What do you mean?
I've told you. Any decision made for course of action after I turned up at home was mine and mine alone.
If you're going to say no comment and wish to exercise your right to silence, could you say no comment to all the questions?
All right. No comment to all the questions.
I told my own children their father was dead. What have I done?
That's the part I find incredible. That's the part that's going to make the headlines. And that's the part people are going to resent you for.
She nods sadly.
I'm sorry. How am I ever going to face them again? How are they ever going to forgive me for what I've done? I'm so, so sorry.
She breaks down and weeps. John sits in the police interview room, looking remorseful. Anne prays at a church. Then an aircraft touches down in England. Police officers are waiting to arrest Anne as she passes through customs into the arrivals lounge.
Hello.
She looks terrified.
You, John Darwin, have pleaded guilty to a sophisticated fraud, born out of your own greed and desperation. You and Darwin collaborated in that fraud and pursued the fiction that you had been bereaved. I accept that you, John, were the driving force behind the whole scheme, but that you and Darwin were central to the fraud's success. You played your own part, efficiently, and in my view, wholeheartedly. John Darwin, giving you credit for your plea of guilty, the sentence of this court is 6 years and 3 months. You and Darwin, however, are not entitled to any such credit. Given your central role in the fraud, the sentence I pass on you is 6 years and 6 months.
Detective Sergeant Twist shoots her a cold glance, and Mark turns to a distraught Anthony.
Very well. Take them down.
John offers Anne his hand, but she flinches and pulls her hand away. Flick watches Mark's emotional face. Anne and John are led down a corridor to their separate prison cells.
Annie.
She refuses to speak to John and steps forward into her cell. The door is slammed shut. John's placed in his cell. Anne stands alone, looking small and fragile.
Dear Mark and Anthony, I can't imagine how you must be feeling. I can understand it if I'm the last person you want to hear from, but I need to tell you both how sorry I am for all the pain and anguish I've caused. All I can do is hope that one day you'll find it in your hearts to forgive me and your dad. The shame belongs to us and not to you. Love, Mam.
Memories of Anne and John dancing the tango to the gramophone in Panama. They dance and smile in each other's arms.